welcome back to the show. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, Hour 2. And it is a great pleasure, as always, to be joined for this hour by Leon Pittard, Fair Dinkum Leon of Fair Dinkum Radio, one of Australia's only original grassroots shows. I know there's a few people out there doing it. I can't give you an exact number of how many shows there are in Australia, but I know there's Max Egan up there somewhere in the north of New South Wales and a few other people around the country. But Leon, welcome to Truth News once again.
Great. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me on. Great to be with you.
Yeah, look, it's a pleasure as always, Leon. And what I'd like to do in this show is, first of all, I just want to do a kind of a meeting of the minds with you on the war posturing over Syria and our government's incredibly belligerent involvement in that. I also just want to play quickly the latest from the US. I've got here a clip of President Obama speaking, and I think it's fairly recent. It's straight off the Sydney Morning Herald website from today.
I've made a decision that America should take action, but I also believe that we will be much more effective, we will be stronger if we take action together as one nation. The key point that I want to emphasize to the American people, the military plan that has been developed by our Joint Chiefs and that I believe is appropriate is proportional, it is limited, it does not involve boots on the ground. This is not Iraq and this is not Afghanistan.
Okay, I'm also going to play to you a short clip from John Kerry, and this is also a new clip of John Kerry, and this is under the title of an article from The Age, Obama's Syria Strike Gets the Nod from Key Republicans, although, of course, John Kerry is not a Republican, but let's just play that.
But Secretary Hagel and I and many of you sitting on the dais remember Iraq in a special way because we were here for that vote. We voted. And so we are especially sensitive, Chuck and I, to never again asking any member of Congress to take a vote on faulty intelligence. And that is why our intelligence community has scrubbed and re-scrubbed the evidence. I will tell you, there are some people hoping that the United States Congress doesn't vote for this very limited request the president has put before you. Iran is hoping you look the other way. Our inaction would surely give them a permission slip for them to at least misinterpret our intention, if not to put it to the test. Hezbollah is hoping that isolationism will prevail. North Korea is hoping that ambivalence carries the day. They are all listening for our silence.
Okay, well, there we have it. There's the U.S. President and the Secretary of State there. Now, the only reason I'm playing that is not because they have provided any interesting information. We know everything they're saying is a complete load of baloney. One thing I'm not sure about, and I think a lot of people are not sure about, is what the real intention here is. It looks to me, and I think most people, most commentators, most analysts are agreeing at this point, it looks to me that they are pretty well committed to a military strike now. And in the event that they do retreat from that, it's going to make America's prestige in the world look very, very weak. It's going to weaken America tremendously if they don't strike. So I think it's fairly confident now to assume that this military strike is going ahead. We've got the USS Nimitz now in the Red Sea. We've got destroyers, a whole lot of firepower in the Mediterranean. And, of course, Obama is doing this bizarre little back-and-forth tactic where he says, well, we're going to do it, but we're going to ask for Congress's approval, but we don't really need Congress's approval. It's going to be very limited. There's this incredible sort of convoluted language around it, which is actually it's more bizarre than anything I've seen in the past. A quick take from you on that whole situation, Leon.
Well, the whole situation there is it's just a terrible, terrible thing that we're witnessing take place. I mean, what we're really witnessing is the empire flexing its muscles to continue its aims of total world dominance. And when we look at Syria, it was one of the sovereign nations that Wesley Clark spoke about when he outlined seven different nations that the US would go to war with. So we should not forget history. Whenever we're speaking about any of these current events, we must link historical statements and intent that was documented decades ago. So Syria has been on the list for a long time. And, I mean, what we see taking place is that Obama got no congressional approval for Libya, and all the drone strikes that he's killing hundreds of people continually, probably thousands per year just from drones alone in Pakistan, Afghanistan and other areas, there's no congressional approval for that. There is no there's no oversight by the people. What we're seeing really, in my view, my stated opinion, is we're seeing the emergence of a tyrannical dictator that is speaking doublespeak, and it's lies. War is peace. Slavery is freedom, and that's what the language really is. And it's conditioning the people to accept tyranny. And, you know, we could get down to the tin tacks as we go along about who actually committed these chemical attacks. And, you know, we know that Al-Qaeda is an operation of the CIA. So, I mean, for those of us in the research community, what we're seeing really, I think, is an incredible development day by day, week by week, and it just continually expands of the empire in its aim for world dominance of resources, and obviously the ultimate resource, Hereward, is us, the people.
Yeah, a resource to be exploited and farmed. A couple of points that you made I'd like to comment on. You talked about a dictator. Now, the curious thing here is that what we have is very different to the epoch of dictators in the fascist era and throughout the 20th century. The new forms of dictatorship are not actually embodied in one individual, and it's very, very important to understand that, because if you don't, you can easily be fooled by the fact that the heads keep changing. You know, the man in charge keeps changing, but the agenda stays the same. I mean, if you go back from, say, Clinton to go back to early, you could go right back through the whole lot, actually. But let's take George Bush 1 to Clinton to George Bush 2 to Obama. Is there any change? Is there any change in the overall pattern of hegemony and patterns of global domination? And you can certainly go back to the 80s, 70s and 60s and see the same thing, right back to the Eisenhower, who, of course, warned about the rise of the military-industrial complex. But, of course, Eisenhower himself was a product of the military-industrial complex, and he was involved in all kinds of ruthless activities against Castro. Go back to the Second World War. Look at the way the Second World War was engineered. Look at the way they provoked Japan. Very interesting comparisons, isn't it? Look at the way they provoked Japan into war. Japan didn't really want to go to war with the West. They had to. They were forced into it. And I do believe, and I'm not saying the Japanese were great. I'm not saying Hirohito and the Bushido cult was a good thing. Of course not. But the point is that the manipulators in the great game used it, and they're doing the same old tactic again, aren't they? Over to you, Lee.
And that's it. I mean, you know, if we go back two generations to our parents' generation,
yeah,
World War One was sold as the war that would end all wars.
Yes.
It was sold to the people as being the answer for peace. And, you know, it's interesting watching what's taking place, because I really do believe that, and I don't know what the percentage are, but, you know, as being a part of the research community, obviously we keep our ears to the ground, but there is a lot of people waking up, I think, to the fact that that war is continually being sold to the people as an answer to peace. If we just go back to Kerry's statement there for a moment.
Sure.
Like, in that statement that he was speaking about, he mentioned how he and others were a part of the people that voted for the Iraq invasion. Now, he said he more or less admitted there that the evidence that they had to take them into Iraq was flawed. In that statement, he said, you know, but we've since scrubbed it and scrubbed it. Now we know. Now we're sure that this is right. So there was an admission there by the warmongers that the whole Iraq conflict and the, you know, millions dead now, 1.5 million, whatever the numbers are, and the continued occupation of a sovereign nation was based on a lie, was based on a fraud. And so if we examine that, we the people, we say we do not trust this empire. We do not trust their stooges that they roll out and say, oh, this evidence is correct. Now we want to kill more people. And you notice that the answer, the only answer these people have got is more death, more murder, more selected strikes. You know, these surgical, they call them surgical strikes. Don't worry about it. It's only a small thing. We're only going to kill a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand people. And let's not forget, Herod, that the empire is guilty of chemical weapons warfare throughout the decades. You know, let's not forget that the empire that our taxes pay for have been using white phosphorus. They've been using sarin gas. They've been using Agent Orange. They themselves are the terrorists. And yet the warfare that we're really involved in, I mean the real warfare that you and I are involved in and many others around the world, is disseminating the language, the political speech, which is there designed to funnel the people within a certain direction behind the empire. Well, Harold, I'm in resistance, and I know you are. We're in resistance to these evil, tyrannical forces which have only one answer, and that is to kill our fellow man wherever they're living, all under the pretext of lies.
Yeah, and, you know, we have only one option. As ordinary people who are not part of the governing control system, we are the controlled, right, from their perspective. Our only option, our only strategy is if we start to come together and make our voice louder and louder and louder. If we don't do that, we will only facilitate and accelerate the race to tyranny. So it is now more important than ever that people come together and do anything they can and everything that they can to make their voice known. And I assure you, I'm working towards assisting that and facilitating that with the show. I'm putting a massive amount of work into expanding the reach of my show, which I'm going to be talking about soon. We're going to break. Stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio. Don't go away.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
With Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Leon Pittard today about the madness that is modern civilization. Well, I should say it's mainly one part of modern civilization, one corner of the world. Well, I shouldn't even say one corner of the world. It's one segment of the world spread out across several continents, but it is not the whole world. And I'm not saying that China and Russia and Southeast Asia and South America and Africa are all populated by wonderful, peaceful, fun-loving countries. Of course, there's a lot of issues in many parts of the world, and there's a lot of bad governments. But on the scale of badness, on the scale of evil, what we currently have with the Western Axis, as I like to call it, just in inverting the terminology there, the Western Axis is a particularly evil, malevolent, malignant manifestation of hegemony. And I think you've really got to compare it to Hitler. You've got to compare it to fascism. You've got to compare it to the Napoleonic era. But again, it's hard to compare it because it is different. It is actually a new manifestation of evil, which borrows from and inherits from a lot, but then has actually taken it to a new level, more sophisticated. As I noted earlier, no longer relying on the face of the Big Brother, you know, the Orwellian Big Brother concept, but using so many of the other Orwellian constructs in an anonymized way. The state has become personified as an impersonal, anonymous presence, which we must all bow down to, and which will supplant all of our loyalties. It will supplant our loyalties to our family, to our culture, to our religion, to our morality. It will kind of tear us away because it actually gives us a new religion. And when you think of it that way, you actually can see it. Yes, it is actually a type of new religion. If you buy into this, you actually have to let go of any kind of normal morality. Wouldn't you agree with that, Leon? Is it by buying into these ruthless, unbelievable military adventures, you're actually kind of decapitating your own moral compass? Sorry, strange metaphor there, but what do you have to say to that?
I think you're right. And look, even if we put religion aside and let's just take humanity as a whole, humanity as a whole on the earth today is we could basically divide them into two, the way I see it anyway, this is my view, two separate lines of thought. One line of thought is that we need government to keep us safe, to provide things for us, and that government is basically, you know, our saviour. Government is there to look after us, keep us, educate our children, clean us up when we get sick, you know, do all these things for us. So there's this dependence on government by, I would say, the majority of the people worldwide. And then there is another, I guess, a lot smaller group of thinkers in the world, which I think are part of the research community, that are learning that government may have done good things in the past and may have had a place in societies, but government has become a tyrannical, beastly power which is sponsoring death worldwide. And its answer for what it is calling, you know, the peace of the future, the utopia of the future that government wants, is more death. In other words, its answer for life in their, or peace in their words, is more death. And you're right, it's about worshipping that state. It's about worshipping, loyally giving your support to their words, to their decisions, their acts, whatever decisions that they make. And it is, that's the way I see the two groups, and all the people in the research community that, you know, really, I think, listen to our programs, Herewood.
Yes.
Are thinkers, and they're people that say, well, hang on, we went into Iraq because they said that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. That was a lie. 9/11, we were told, was committed by Muslim terrorists, but when we look at all the different evidence, we know there's a lot of lies there. And all of these different events we look at, we see the government's been lying to us for decades. And then we as individuals need to make a decision about who we are, who is our community, Because, see, government is developing this thing called society, which says you must support, you must belong to, you must pay society, you must support it, and any resistance to it, you're an enemy of the state, so yes. to speak. Whereas the community I belong to is you, Herewood, other thinkers in the world. I'm a part of a community worldwide that is resisting the culture of death and war. And, I mean, this subject we're talking about with Syria, as you said, it's not the whole picture. It's one part of it, but it's an important part because, as we saw Kevin Rudd just a few days ago, come out in full support, in fact, encouraging intervention into this sovereign country. And to me, you know, I don't want to belong to that society. I don't want to belong to the society he represents. He is not my... you know, in any way, my ruler or my leader or even my prime minister. For me, he is an imposter. He's a fraud. He's a traitor against freedom. He's a traitor against humanity's freedom and life. The most important thing, the thing that we stand for, the thing that I stand for, is the freedom and life of humanity. And the only way you can promote that is to promote freedom and life, not to promote death, the use of warfare. This has never worked. Look at the history of mankind. Wars do not create peace. And you know, that's where I see there's two divisions happening, and that's what's forming. And that's a part of the work we're involved in, Herewood, I guess, is, you know, analysing the real story and questioning our listeners and saying, do you really think that death's the answer? I mean, these hard questions, even with, if you look at some of the, if I could use the right side, of the political sphere, who are advocating war. The left side once didn't. Now the left side is. So it's like there's this homogenisation of political power behind war from the controlling oligarchy.
Yes, well, of course, in the US, never forget that the Vietnam War was launched under a Democrat government, which we would... put more on the left. Of course, in Australia, it was opposed by the Labor Party. But in America, at least, the Democrats and the Republicans, between them, could you say who's the more hawkish historically of those two parties?
No, well, I wouldn't be able to. But you know, you mentioned a very good point. I mean, let's bring it home here to Australia. Here's now the Labor Prime Minister advocating war. And I mean, once upon a time, the anti-war movement would have been aligned with the Labor Party or the Greens.
Yes.
Where are the Greens? Where are the people coming out saying, no, we don't want any conflict. Australia is going to stand in the way. We are not going to say yes. We are not going to be a part of this. I mean, where are these people? They've all just homogenised into really the empire, behind the empire's decisions.
Actually, you make a very good point. I haven't heard a peep from the Greens about Syria. I'm sure they're not pro-invasion or military strike, but it certainly hasn't been prominent in the news. I'm just doing a quick Google search here now as we speak on Greens and Syria, and I can't see anything here coming up.
You mentioned earlier, Herewood, if I may, you were speaking about the reasons for this current agitation.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the world has been in war now, constant war for decades. It hasn't stopped. There's war going on continually. Now, we touched on resources, and what we need to understand is that Syria is rich in gas. It has a lot of natural resources, and it has signed future contracts.
Just finish that sentence, Leon.
Yeah, they have signed future contracts with Russia to supply Russia with gas, but there needs to be a pipeline built. Now, the US does not want Syria to be independent of resources.
Absolutely. Very, very important point. We'll continue with that when we come back from the break here with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio. And my guest today is Leon Pittard of Fair Dinkum Radio. Please check it out. Put that into Google and you'll get a really original Australian-made podcast, very down-to-earth, but very very analytical, and a show that that looks about everything that's going on in the world and the hidden stories that are most important for freedom and truth and democracy. So I just want to continue with Syria. I want to talk a little bit about the Australian election coming up. For those of us listening overseas, you may not be aware of it, but Australia is going into a federal election this Saturday, and it's quite a historic election in terms of the amount of acrimony, the amount of feeling that has been in the population about it because of the way in which the incumbent government has handled themselves and conducted themselves. Again, you know, what we've seen with the Labor government over the past 5 years now, since they were elected, is seems to me indicative of the new callous, tyrannical style of governance that we see in Western nations. I mean, we see it equally in the UK. We're seeing it in France. We're seeing it in Canada, in the US. Western countries have deteriorated. Their quality of democracy has deteriorated. Not necessarily their quality of life as measured in basic standards of affluence, although I do think that's actually at least static, if not getting better. I mean, compared to China and Japan and some countries in Southeast Asia, our basic infrastructure is actually either static or decaying. Our trains, many things that we would look to as signs of economic prosperity, our public transport and things like that, have just been allowed to just rot on the vine. So in many ways, I do think that that Western civilization is going through some sort of decline and decay. But as that's happening, the military might is stronger than ever. The military force, it's like everything's been sucked out of the prosperity of the society to feed the military. And that even applies to Australia. I mean, Australia's military expenditure is huge, and our involvements in overseas conflicts are extraordinary. For a country that's on the other side of the world, which has, you know, 24-odd million people, that we have this incredible, like, first strike capability, this incredible, like, projection of force capability, and that we're always getting involved into foreign conflicts. A quick take on that one from you, Leon.
Well, I don't think we should be involved in any foreign conflicts. I think we should be a very individualist nation, where we should say we are not getting involved in any wars. We are going to be the nation of peace. We are going to set the standard in the world, and we are not going to be involved in any military conflicts at all. In fact, we're going to be a peace-loving people. And the support that we would put into bullets, we're going to put into food and infrastructure in our own country. And you're right. You touched on a very important thing. It's interesting watching, really, I think, Australia, how it is deteriorating. We've racked up incredible debt now. 60% plus, I was looking at a report the other day, in costs of living, including gas, electricity, over the last, since 2007, with a 22% plus increase in wages. Now, I haven't experienced that 22% increase in wages, so I'm not sure exactly where that comes from, because most people I know are sort of struggling. But you did mention something very important, Harold, which I'd like to emphasise here, and that is I still believe we live in the best country in the world. And, you know, we are incredibly blessed. We have a wonderful country here. And the thing that makes me so angry and so upset is that it could continue, but what we are documenting and what we are witnessing is the gradual deterioration, the gradual removal of freedoms, the basic autonomy, the ability to choose, about what happens with your children when they go to school. You know, there's pressure with vaccines and all different things. You know, there's economic sanctions put on people that make decisions for freedom. And so what the thing that really makes me angry is that I can see our country declining into, I can see tyranny so close, and yet what you said before is right, it's a different form. It's not like it was in Germany or Russia or China. This is different. This is public-private partnerships that is taking the wealth out of the hands of the people into largely transnational corporations, foreign-owned corporations, which will basically own the country. And that's really the process that we're witnessing go on. While the increase of our cost of living and all of these things is continuing to grow, whereas the wages we're getting in are less because we must compete with the with third world conditions. And you know, I heard a farmer interviewed this week where he said that the farmers are getting third world prices, but we're expected to have first world regulation and infrastructure, and that's why 750,000 of our fruit trees were pulled out last week. This is a destruction of a country because we are no longer independent with food. We have to actually import food now. And, you know, all of these things, when we look at it, and, you know, we can get into the election, some of the issues, but if we look at the real issues that are facing this country, they're the ones that aren't being addressed in this election campaign going into the future.
Yes, and of course, you live in rural Australia. I'm not exactly sure your exact location, but what's the atmosphere on the ground there? What's the feeling like? What are people thinking about this coming election in your sphere, Leon?
Well, most of the people I speak to are going to be very happy to get rid of this current Labor government, and because we live here in Rob Oakeshott's the electorate that Rob Oakeshott was in, the electoral line. And
is he still standing? Is he still the candidate?
No, he's actually not standing. There's a local doctor here that's standing for the National Party, and he'll get this seat.
Right.
But the point is, that's the problem, and you would pick this up too with a lot of people in the research community. They can't wait to get rid of Kevin Rudd. They can't wait to get rid of Labor.
Yeah.
It's not going to solve the problem. Let's talk about the real issues, the real structural issues that, you know, are really facing us, which we don't talk about. Now, I know the thing that's killing farmers is free trade agreements, our UN treaties. These things are forcing our farmers off the land, right? That's one major component which political party will talk about, except for, I must admit, I spoke with your friend Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council.
Yes,
they understand that the economy tied to the free trade agreements and the derivatives fraud through the banking, that's a big structural issue, Herewood, that none of them are talking about, and that will continue whether it's Liberal or Labor. It doesn't matter, that structural part will continue.
Right. Yeah. So, look, you know, I have this incredible sort of sick feeling in my stomach when I think about Tony Abbott, because I hear him saying a lot of good things, and he sounds like a real guy, you know, in a lot of ways. His stance on the carbon tax and his willingness to basically call it like it is, and even say that the ETS is a load of bunk, you know. The carbon tax or the ETS, it's mincing words to basically say one's better than the other. They're both ridiculous. The idea of putting a price on carbon is ridiculous, and it's a common sense, rational realization there that he's actually expressed. But, you know, he's not in power. And, you know, I saw Kevin Rudd back when he was in opposition looking quite reasonable too. I mean, I don't know if you remember, Leon, but before the federal election back in 2007, I think it was, Kevin Rudd popped up as someone who seemed incredibly rational, reasonable, well-educated. He could speak Chinese. And everyone thought, wow, this guy looks like the real deal. I might get your take on that when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Really interesting discussion here with Leon Pittard. Please stay with us. Truth News Radio. I'm talking to Leon Pittard, and we've been discussing Syria, and we've moved into the Australian federal election. Leon, I was saying there earlier about this transition, this transformation that occurs when a candidate goes from being leader of the opposition to prime minister. And, you know, it's always been there, of course, but it's become more and more stark and more frightening these days. What's your expectation with Tony Abbott? And first of all, I think he probably will win the election. I guess you agree with that. But it's not going to be a landslide. You know, it's going to be it's probably going to be a strong win, but not a landslide win. And what's going to happen with Tony's positions on various agendas, especially if say the Greens have a number of votes in the House and are able to exert a lot of influence on the government?
Well, let's start with the carbon tax. Yeah. And I think the, you know, even if I was in the political game, which I'm not, but we're looking from the outside, the Liberal National Party have made a fatal mistake. They should have come out right from the beginning and basically said, this is a complete fraud. We're going to axe the lot. That's what they should have said.
Yes.
Instead of that, they've come to this halfway mark where they believe a fraud, but they don't believe a fraud. So
they've got the direct action, or what do they call it, abatement programs, or whatever they call it.
Direct action abatement program. But it's still costing billions. Yeah. And the point is, they're still wanting to reduce emissions by 5% by 2020. Well, if it's a fraud, why do it? That's, I mean, this really reveals politics, doesn't it?
It certainly does. That's, you're right, and I think we need to. We're probably going to be focusing on that a lot. If the Liberals come to power, this is going to then be a big focus of what we're talking about on this show, because as our listeners know, we are massive skeptics of both climate change science and the bogus, shonky solutions to that are basically just a con that was really actually invented by Enron, a company which, you know, which lives in infamy. You know, the idea of carbon trading is fundamentally, in its essence, a duplicitous activity. You know, trading permits to pollute. This is how they describe it, right? This is how it's actually promoted in their propaganda. They call it permits to pollute. Why would you give someone a permit to pollute? Does that make any sense? If it's pollution, you shouldn't be doing it, right? But the idea that they're saying it's a permit to pollute is an acknowledgement that actually we have to do it. Well, if we have to do it, why? Okay, but then they say, well, the big polluters are going to pay. Second lie, right? They say the big polluters are going to pay, but in fact, no, you pay, Leon and me and good listeners out there, you're paying. The big polluters aren't paying. They just put the price up. Incredible, yeah, isn't it?
It is. And well, the thing is, as we understand, there's so many different forces at work here. I mean, look at the media in Australia. You look at the ABC, completely pro, you know, the socialist program, complete with the, you know, the whole climate change fraud. So you've got that force. And let's talk from the political angle. You've got that force against you, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, where all of that media is always biased against anyone that would say that climate change is a fraud. So if the Liberal Party did come out, they've got to run that gauntlet, as well as, of course, the corporate media. I'd say the great majority of corporate media is captivated by this particular fraud. But let's look at history. Tony Abbott is a Rhodes Scholar, and I like to look at the bigger picture. Now, Cecil Rhodes set up his Rhodes Scholarship to train people in globalism. Let's face it, that's basically what it was about. It was about training future prospective leaders in society, in different nations, to bring about the very regime that we were talking about, what's happening in Syria and the globalisation of all resources. We talked about pollution under the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Atlantic Partnership that's going on. Those polluters can do what they want. They're developing their own courts against our sovereignty. So this idea that, you know, we've got to stop the big polluters, and we know this is all lies. We've got to go beyond that. Look at the bigger picture. Let's go back. What did the Liberals do? Okay, and this is where, I mean, no one wants a change of government more than I do, but I don't have any confidence as far as a change in the agenda. And the agenda I'm talking about here, Herod, is the removal of our autonomy, our sovereignty, our independence as a people. This is what's under assault, our culture, everything. So look at what the Liberals did. They brought in the terrorism laws under John Howard. They can just disappear you or me now. We've got that example of that fellow, Muhammad Mahif, or whatever his name was. He disappeared for whatever and got paid out. Now, look what they did to Telstra. They sold the people's assets. Now, okay, we could debate about whether or not government should own assets, but why shouldn't government own the essential infrastructure so it's not subject to corporate manipulation, which is what's happening now?
Yeah.
And we're going to pay three times the price of gas within 18 months because we're going to world parity pricing. Why can't we pay our price? You see, this is Liberal policy. Don't forget, this is what the Liberals are doing. Look what they did at Port Arthur with the guns. Now, I'm not a gun person, but I'm just looking at history. Now,
indeed,
people are thinking, oh, the Liberals are going to save us. They're going to give us our rights back. Look what they did with the Water Act. The Water Act, they took away our water so it can be bought and sold by private corporations.
That's incredible.
You see, we're going to look at this history and say, like, don't get me wrong. I look at Tony Abbott too and I think, great, he's a fit guy, you know, he's against abortion. I take my hat off to him for that. He's a Catholic, that's his business. But the point is, I want to like him, Herewood.
Yeah.
But the point is, look at the agenda. This is the issue that you and I are broadcasting about.
Yeah, look at the agenda and then realize, okay, we've got to have the realization that there is no real democracy. I guess that's the first point. Would you agree?
Yep, I do agree.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to recognize that there is no real democracy. It's a phony democracy. It's a fake democracy. But we then each of us have to make a decision about what we want to do. The way I think is that we have to engage. A lot of people think that because the system is so corrupted, we've got to completely separate ourselves from it and go off and create some new utopian society. For example, the Zeitgeist movement. The problem there, right, is that will, I guarantee you that when you do that, you will just reproduce or maybe even create new and worse forms of tyranny, because you think you can just go off and create your little utopian alternative thing, but you will be unconsciously going down the track of buying into memes that actually are then the groundwork for the same thing. It's a complicated thing, and we're at the end of the show now. I don't have time to talk about it. But are you following me on that, and are you up to speed with Zeitgeist?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit like political parties that have sprung up here, Bob Katter's party and the other minor, what's his name, Clive Palmer's party. I mean, anyone that puts a name, their own name, to a political party, my radar straight away goes up. And I think, what happens if he dies tomorrow?
Actually, on that, just to interject, I've got I had today John Bursell from the who is a representative of that party on the show, and You know, he's a friend of mine. He's actually a 9/11 truther and a member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So Bobcat, it can't be all that bad, but do continue.
Yeah, but like I'm not criticising individuals. I'm just saying the principle of having a person's name, a bit like, say, let's say, I don't know if it was, but Pauline Hanson's One Nation, for instance. You've still got that one person as the leader, which to me is the whole thing I'm in resistance against, this one man controlling the top of the pyramid. And it doesn't matter which label you've got to it. What we want, what I would love to see and what I want to advocate is self-autonomy, where, you know, we the people choose what we get involved in, what we don't get involved in. But when you've got, and I remember one American president, I think it was Jimmy Carter, where he said, I'm leaving the office of president to gain the only office that's higher, and that is the office of citizen.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, that's the way it should be, that, you know, the person at the top is really should be just a servant, not a name, as in it's, you know, the Obama the Obama Democrat Party or whatever it was. But you're right. I think a lot of these different things end up with similar structures, with power struggles at the top.
And the more idealistic ones, the ones that want to change everything, I mean, let's look at the French Revolution, let's look at the Russian Revolution, they end up creating the worst tyrannies of all. You know, so the lessons of history are there, right? And so this is what I often say to people who say, oh, we're just going to go off and create our other little society. We're not going to engage with this. I think that's actually just another path of delusion, actually. I think you've got to engage with it. I think you actually have to be a part of the system, knowing the system is corrupted, but still be a part of it. It's a tricky thing that we have to do. But that's kind of our responsibility, because we've also got to teach people. You know, we've got to reach out to people who are in our community who don't understand what's going on. So we can't just separate ourselves. Quick take on that, because we're just at the end of the show.
Well, I think that's our job, Herewood, to develop community with the people in the research community, do our work and share what we see taking place, and get others behind us to help it all happen together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Leon. I look forward to talking to you again, and do encourage listeners to visit your website and check out your show. I know you're doing a lot of interviews, and we'll post links there to your site. So take it easy and have a good election, mate.
Thanks, mate. Great work. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, that's another show for Truth News Radio for this week. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. I'll be back next week. My name's Herewood Fenton. I'll see you then.